So what we discussed yesterday was wave functions for quantum Hall effect with integer or fractional filling. So what we would like to do is to first deduce the degeneracy of, in this case, the lowest Landau level. So the wave function in the lowest Landau level can be created by acting with ladder operators, A daggers and B daggers, on vacuum. Now, because we are talking about the lowest Landau level, the occupation number of A dagger A, for A dagger A is zero, and for B, you can have any quanta. So there is an infinite degeneracy given by this index M. This index M was defined as B dagger B minus A dagger A. So in the zeroth Landau level, A dagger A is zero. So this index M simply gives you the value of the number of quanta in harmonic oscillator B. So what we would like to do is to estimate this degeneracy. So at the moment we have infinite degeneracy, but in reality, we only have finite systems. So let's assume that our system is a finite circle of radius r. Now, with this wave function, you can calculate what this wave function really looks like. So you see there is a polynomial. So in the complex plane, at the origin it vanishes, and there is a Gaussian. So at infinity it vanishes. But somewhere in between, there is a maxima. We can calculate that maxima by setting this to zero. You'll find that so setting the derivative with respect to z to zero, we get this term, and we get minus z bar over four from this exponential. So what this means is, so let me just take out z to the power m minus one, factor outside. So at mod z equal to square root 2m, this wave function has a maxima, right? So it's zero at the origin. There is this polynomial factor. There is this Gaussian factor. But in between, at square root 2m, this wave function has a maximum. So at the moment, we are dimensionless. If you want to put in dimensions back, you have to multiply both sides with the magnetic length. Now, the way we are going to estimate the degeneracy is we are going to say that if this maxima of the wave function falls outside the system size, that state does not belong to the system. What that means is, so this is the radius. So you can think in complex plane. What this maxima represents is that you have a maxima, and then the wave function is damped, is zero in the origin, and is cut off by a Gaussian. So you can think of this wave function as a circle of radius r, with this radius, circle of radius square root 2m. So when this, the radius of this circle is equal to the boundary, that's the maximum value that this radius can take. So you have many states. Each state is labeled by m. M equal to zero state is at the origin. It's just the Gaussian factor. m equal to one state, is you can think of it as a circle with square root 2L, radius square root 2L. M equal to two state is similarly square root 2L times square root of 2, and so on. And we want to count how many states there are. So that simply tells us that m, the maximum value that m can take, is r squared divided by 2L squared. So this is the degeneracy of the lowest Landau level.
Question?
Yes.
I think I missed, what was the boundary condition here?
So at the moment, we have, this is our two deck, and we are assuming that we have vacuum outside. So vacuum outside means the wave function, there is nothing outside. So the if you have an electronic wave function, it must be zero.
Right. But so the, our wave function decays exponentially as r goes to infinity.
So
like, shouldn't it go to zero at the boundary?
So this is, we are estimating m. So at the boundary, so at the moment we have not imposed, this is the wave function by solving the Schrodinger equation. If you want, you can impose boundary conditions on it, and you will get, so the energy of this is still h bar omega c n plus half. If you want, you can impose boundary conditions, and you will end up lifting some degeneracy and things like that. But at the moment, we are assuming this r to be very large. So it's large enough that this Gaussian factor, for all practical purposes, wave function is zero.
Okay.
For all of them. Yes?
Sorry. Where does L come from?
This R?
L, yeah.
L. So L is the units, this coordinates, they are measured in unit of in units of L.
Okay.
So L is the magnetic length. This is square root h bar over EP. So this is the number of states, maximum possible number of states. Also, this is just an estimate. But we can work with this because it's at least it's finite. So that's the whole point, that if you really have an infinite system, you do have infinite degeneracy. But in real physical systems in the lab, you would have finite number of states that each Landau level can accommodate. Because of now this finite number of states within Landau level, you can now think of a situation where number of electrons you have is lower than that number, right? So this allows us to define a concept called filling factor. So this filling factor is defined as the density of electrons that you have divided by the total density of electrons you could have in a Landau level. So the total density of electrons would be fixed by your two deck or by the sample in the lab. Rho max, and right now we are only talking about the lowest Landau level, is basically this number divided by the area. So it is r squared divided by 2L squared. And you can see that this number can be written as 2 pi L squared times density of electrons. And now we'll use a notation which writes this number in terms of magnetic flux quantum. So this can be written as 2 pi rho electron h bar divided by b. Now, everything other than rho electron, we are going to define a new quantity, rho b, which we call magnetic flux density. And this is going to be EB divided by 2 pi h bar, which is simply h. So this you can rewrite as B h over E. This quantity h over E is defined as flux quantum phi naught. So phi naught, it's a universal constant. It includes the Planck's constant and the electronic charge. And this is called the magnetic flux quantum. So what you're really doing in this flux density is you're measuring how many flux quanta there are in the magnetic field. Any questions? Yes.
Is rho electron per area or per volume?
Per area. So this quantity can be written as rho divided by rho b, rho electron divided by rho b. So now comes the key concept, which is imagine that you have nu equal to 1. So nu equal to 1 means that for every electron in your system, you have exactly 1 magnetic flux quantum. Does that make sense? So mu equal to 1 implies that for every electron, we have exactly 1 electron per magnetic flux quantum. Okay, so in general, depending on what the density, what is the number of electrons that you have, what is the density of electrons in your system, you may or may not have nu equal to 1, right? You may have less electrons than the lowest Landau level. Now, so far we have been talking about wave functions of these Landau levels, eta 0 m, then n equal to 1 has wave functions. And in general, for n and m, we could write this in terms of associated Laguerre polynomials. Now, what we want to do is now construct wave functions for electrons. So far, we have a bunch of states. And now we fill these states with electrons. Imagine you have the number of electrons you have is less than the degeneracy of the lowest Landau level. That means you can choose many of the states within the lowest Landau level and fill them up. So a partially filled Landau level has a huge amount of degeneracy. There are simply many number of ways to fill number of electrons that is smaller than the number of degenerate states you have in the Landau level. However, if you have nu equal to 1, then the state is unique. So nu equal to 1 means fully filled Landau level. This is not degenerate. You have n, capital N is the number of levels you have in the lowest Landau level, and you have capital N electrons. So Pauli exclusion principle tells us that you will fill all of them. And that's it. There is no degeneracy left. All states are filled. However, if it was partial filling, there are many ways to do this. So the ground state of the system is going to be highly degenerate. So let's try to write down the state. So for nu equal to 1, we know that the ground state is going to be unique. Now let's try to write down the state. Now we know one way to write down the wave function of a many-body system is by using Slater determinant or a permanent, right? So now we are dealing with fermions, so we should use Slater determinant. So I'm going to write down wave function of capital N electrons, where capital N is also the number of degenerate states in the lowest Landau level. So the wave function, so now the notation is a bit tricky. So the lowest Landau level wave function is denoted by, actually, let's just call it this. So I want to write down the wave function for the lowest Landau level, which is fully filled. So when it is fully filled, I can write down this wave function. So this wave function can be written in the form of Slater determinant, where I will have eta 0, 0 of z1, eta 0, 0, z2. And so this is a Slater determinant. I will choose capital N coordinates for z1, z2 till zn. And I will choose all of the states. And I will make sure I have all permutations possible in my wave function. So you can have 0, 1, z1, eta 0, 2, z1, and so on. So this is the wave function for the lowest Landau level, right? Now, the reason we are right now dealing with lowest Landau level is because these wave functions are relatively simple. What I mean by that is, other than this Gaussian factor, z bar, conjugate z, does not appear. So we know all of these states. Also, so this is a determinant. In this, so ignore all the normalization factors. So we would have some normalization factor also. We are ignoring them for the moment. This determinant will have many terms, actually n capital N factorial number of terms. Each term has a product of many Landau level wave functions. Each wave function in that product has a Gaussian factor. So I can factor out a Gaussian factor and write down this state as 1 z1 z1 square 1 z2 z2 square 1 z3 z3 square and so on. And then I will have exponential minus 1 over 4 sum over I mod zi squared. So what I've done is I've replaced these wave functions by these quantities, these expressions here, and I've factored out a Gaussian factor that will be there for all of them. So the determinant has many terms. Each term is a product of capital N wave functions. Each of this term has a Gaussian factor. Now, this determinant is well known, and it is called van der Mond. Van der Mond determinant. So in one of the tutorials or homeworks, you would show that this van der Mond determinant can also be written as product J less than k. Z j minus zk. And then we just have the exponential factor. So this determinant here, it can be written as product j less than k of this quantity here. Any questions so far? Now, this wave function has some special properties. Whenever z j is equal to zk, this wave function vanishes. So this is what you are required, this is what must happen because of Pauli exclusion principle. So this wave functions has zeros, and all zeros are where they must be. So you can say that this wave function has no wasted zeros. The wave function is constructed in a way that it encodes all the Pauli correlations that must be there. To see this, imagine, so there are many terms in this product. Let's write down all the terms that involve Z1. So you will have, so consider this lowest Landau level as a function of Z1. So you will have many terms. Like, you will have terms like z1 minus z2, z1 minus z3, z1 minus zn. You will have many other terms also, but they will not be, they will not depend on z1, right? So you'll have terms like z2 minus z3, z3 minus z4 also in this product. But they will not be a function of z1. So as a function of z1, this wave function has a Gaussian factor. And the prefactor of the Gaussian is a polynomial of order capital N minus 1. This is polynomial in Z1 order capital N minus 1. Now we know the fundamental theorem of algebra, a polynomial order N has N zeros. So this polynomial of order N minus 1 must have N minus 1 zeros. And these N minus 1 zeros are exactly at locations of Z2, Z3 till Zn. Same analysis you can do for other variables z2 and z3, and you'll conclude that all of the correlations that are encoded in this Slater determinant are precisely the Pauli correlations. So this would be useful when we later on discuss fractional quantum Hall effect and talk about composite fermions. So this so far is non-interacting case. We only have kinetic energy, where momentum is replaced by P plus EA. So it includes the effect of magnetic field in the sense that it includes the vector potential in the problem. But so far, we have not included electron-electron interactions. The only correlations that are there in this wave function is the exchange symmetry of fermions. Now, in the same way, you can write down wave function. So this is for the lowest Landau level. You can also write down wave function for higher Landau levels. In that case, what you will have is this sum, it will not end with 0, 0. You will also have terms like 1, 0, basically for eta 1 m. So you will have slightly, for example, if you want to write the wave function for the n equal to 2, you will have a determinant that will have this determinant here, or this matrix here, times another matrix here, which is coming from all the states eta 1m. Right? So the idea is that you can use this later determinant to write down the wave functions of fully filled Landau levels. We are going to focus at lowest Landau level, but this idea can be extended to higher Landau levels also. Now, these wave functions are helpful in explaining the integer quantum Hall effect. That is, when the value of Hall resistance is, when this F is equal to 1, then you can use this wave function and calculate properties of transport coefficients, conductance, and you can conclude that the conductance you'll calculate agrees with this formula. But this wave function is only and only for a fully filled Landau level. It turns out that just 2 years after the discovery of integer quantum Hall effect, fractional quantum Hall effect was discovered. And in fractional quantum Hall effect, you had F equal to 1 by 3. What that means is, So the fractional quantum Hall effect has partially filled Landau level. And so this F is 1 over 3. And you see a plateau at for F corresponding to 1 over 3. Now, this partially filled Landau level, the wave function, cannot be written like this. Moreover, so far, this wave function contains no electron-electron interactions. The fractional quantum Hall effect arises only due to electron-electron correlations or electron-electron interactions, in particular, Coulomb interactions. So if you have 1/3 filling and conditions in your system, which means the density, the electron density and disorder is in a regime where Coulomb repulsion between electrons dominates the Hamiltonian, then you get the fractional quantum Hall effect. So the idea is that we would write down, so we'd like to discuss the case when we have fractional quantum Hall effect. And in particular, we limit ourselves to filling factor F, or this fraction F, which we will also label with nu, which is the notation used here. And the fractions that we are going to look at are fractions like 1 over 3, 2 over 3, 2 over 5, 3 over 5. So now we are interested in discussing the effect of electron-electron interactions on this system, but we restrict ourselves to special fractions which have odd denominator. So the reason we are doing this is because these fractions are easier to discuss. So the ground state corresponding to these fractions can be built or can be understood in terms of these wave functions by defining new quasi-particles, but not all fractions can be understood in this way. Or to build a theory that maps fractions with even denominator to non-interacting lowest Landau level wave functions, you have to do multiple approximations, not just a simple redefinition of excitations in the system. So the idea is that, yes?
Could you just explain like how the stuff we did gives you F not equal to 1? Like how could you get 2 there?
Like, so 2 would mean that, so F equal to 1 is labeled with 0 here. So there is first lambda level. So this index n here, say this index is 1. That would mean you have m degenerate states in the 0th lambda level, m degenerate states in the first lambda level. Imagine all of them are filled. So you have 2 fully filled lambda levels. That would correspond to F equal to 2. So there are many lambda levels. Each lambda level is highly degenerate, and you could have large number of electrons, then you could have 2 fully filled degenerates, lambda levels. Also, degeneracy of the lambda levels depends on the magnetic field, right? So by tuning the magnetic field, you are changing the degeneracy of the lambda levels. So if you have fixed number of electrons, you can change the magnetic field, and there will come a point when these number of electrons need to occupy 2 lambda levels because the degeneracy is quite small and not all of these electrons can be accommodated in the same lambda level. But for the moment, we are going to consider even the lowest lambda level is partially filled. Any other questions? So now we are going to make an assumption that the most important energy scale in the problem is the Coulomb repulsion between these electrons. So two body terms, Coulomb interaction terms between these electrons is the dominant term in the Hamiltonian. And we are going to write down the ground state of the system. So this is what we are going to do. So now we are discussing fractional quantum Hall effect. And let's focus at one particular fraction, nu equal to 1 over 3. Let's write down nu equal to 1 over m, where this m equal to 3 was the first fractional state that was discovered, and that was the first one which was solved. And the way it was solved is by variational principle. So Laughlin guessed the wave function, and then he, with a variational parameter, and then he minimized the Coulomb interaction energy using this variational wave function, and he found out the value for the variational parameter. So the trial wave function that he used was the following. So now I'm going to write here Laughlin. So this is a trial wave function. What he did was he used this wave function and minimized the electron-electron Coulomb repulsion in the 2-deg, assuming that there is a positive background provided by ions. So consider 2-deg with a gallium background. And minimize And this procedure, when you minimize the interaction energy, this procedure will tell you the value of M. And he found that this procedure gives M equal to 3. Later on, a more detailed analysis suggests that this interaction potential energy not only has minima at 3, but there are some other values of M where also the interaction energy is minima. And we also find that this value of M is odd. So there are many values of M that minimize the Coulomb interaction energy in the presence of positively charged background, the Gilliam background for 2-deg using this variational wave function. Any questions?
What is 2-deg?
Oh, two-dimensional electron gas. Sorry. So we discussed, when we discussed Gilliam model, we discussed three-dimensional version. Now this is a two-dimensional version of it. So we have a 2-deg with a Gilliam background and perpendicular magnetic field. And we use this wave function and minimize the Coulomb interaction energy. So we have electron-electron, electron-ion, ion-ion. We write down all these terms. We use this many-body wave function, and we minimize the Coulomb interaction energy. And minimizing will give us the value of the variational parameter M. We find that there are many minimas, M equal to 3, M equal to 5, M equal to 7, but all of them are odd. Now we have some, there are predictions that this wave function makes about excitations of the fractional quantum Hall state, and they are in agreement with the experiments. And for this wave function itself, Laughlin was awarded Nobel Prize in 98, so it has been verified in lab, this particular fraction, 1 over 3, many times. Actually, this is the easiest one to observe in the lab. If you remember the figure that you all got, this thing, you see, you will see a big plateau at 1 over 3. And that is the state we are talking about. Any questions so far? So this wave function represents strongly interacting system. Next, what we are going to do is we will try to build insight into this wave function. And this insight, how to think about this wave function, was provided by another theory, which is called theory of composite fermions. By Jan, what he said is, let's try to construct, so this is wave function for electrons. Let's try to construct new particles. These are strongly interacting electrons. Let's rephrase our theory in terms of weakly interacting new particles. And these new particles, he called composite fermions. So the idea is to write down this wave function, is for strongly interacting electrons. Write down this wave function in terms of weakly interacting composite fermions. And the way we will start is, let's look at this wave function and this wave function. We know this represents all the Pauli correlations for non-interacting system. So what we are going to do is multiply and divide by this factor. So we will multiply and divide by this factor, and we'll write down this Laughlin wave function as product j less than k, cj minus zk to the power m minus 1. And then we have something we understand quite well, which is this times the Gaussian factors. Let me try to write bigger. So all we have done is we have factored out everything other than the wave function for the fully filled lowest Landau level. Now we know that this wave function has all the appropriate symmetry. Why? Let's look here. What happens when you exchange the two fermions here? You pick up a minus sign. If the wave function is constructed as the difference between two coordinates, whenever you exchange, you pick up a minus sign. So all these correlations are already built in here. When you exchange two particles, this term is already going to give us the minus sign we need for fermion exchange symmetry. But now we have this term also. So when you exchange two particles, you pick up an additional phase that is coming from this term. That phase must be equal to 1 so that the wave function is still obeys fermionic exchange symmetry. So the additional phase that this term picks up is minus 1 to the power m minus 1, which I can write it as e to the power I pi m minus 1. This must be equal to e to the power I 2 pi times some integer, let's call it n. So what that tells us is that m must be an odd integer. So have we done this? So m minus 1 must be equal to 2n. Any questions so far? So we have proven that m for this wave function to represent fermions, for this wave function that it represents fermions, m must be odd. So the minimas that we find in Coulomb repulsion, these minimas do represent a wave function that corresponds to fermions. Now comes the trick, and the trick is the following. We define new particles, composite fermions, in a way that the phase that this additional phase that comes from this term is cancelled exactly by the definition of new fermions. So the idea is the following. Now let's take a concrete example of m equal to 3, which means the filling factor is 1 over 3. What does a filling factor of 1 over 3 means? It means that you have exactly 3 times the number of flux quanta as the number of electrons. Right? So let N naught be the number of electrons. That means the external field is 3 times N naught pi naught. Right? So this defining these new particles is easy to show with the picture. So let's say this is my electron. I add to this electron 2 negative flux quanta. And what I will get is depicted like this. And this is my composite fermion. Now, what this definition does is that effective field, if I now calculate what is the effective field that is felt by these composite fermions, I will find that this effective field is the external field minus all the flux quantas coming from these composite fermions minus 2 times N naught phi naught. So this is simply N naught phi naught. So what I've done is I've gone from this system where I have external magnetic field and so such a system will be equal to magnetic flux quanta, and now let me denote this object by this, where this is a composite fermion. So what I have done is I've cancelled some magnetic flux, which now becomes part of the electron itself. And as a result, I have N-naught composite fermions and N-naught flux quanta. So now I have a system which is fully filled, which behaves as if it is fully filled Landau level, with effective magnetic field and composite fermions. So this would represent a fully filled, so one flux per particle in this system, if we define the new fermions like this. Yes?
How does it go from being a third fold to a fold?
So this was the total number of flux quanta externally to each electron, I now say that the electron is not just itself. There are new particles that I should define, or this theory has new particles. These particles are electrons with two negative flux quanta. So these two negative flux quanta for each n naught subtracted from the total field gives me an effective field that these composite fermions will feel. And now this effective field is just n naught times the flux quanta. So now it behaves as if there is one flux quantum per composite fermion. Now these composite fermions themselves would be are non-interacting, because the phases that these the way we have defined these composite fermions is by attaching two negative flux quanta. What that definition does is it exactly cancels out any phase that comes from this term, m minus one. So effectively, you have a wave function that looks like that, the case of non-interacting, fully filled Landau level. Now this idea can be extended to general M. For a general M, composite fermion is simply going to be electron plus m minus one negative So what this theory allows us to do is it allows us to map a interacting system to a non-interacting system by defining new particles. So we start with strongly interacting electrons, and we end up with weakly interacting composite fermions, and we write down the wave function in terms of these weakly interacting fermions, because we know we can use the fully filled Landau level wave functions to write a theory for non-interacting fermions. Because the only correlations I have to worry about then is just the Pauli correlations. So this idea, so far we have only discussed the lowest Landau level. You can apply this to higher fractions, and this is successful in explaining many fractions. There are some fractions that I was trying to mention before where to build a theory of composite fermions is not as straightforward. So first you would have to do some special mean field theory, a special version of Hartree-Fock theory, to deal with electron-electron interactions at those fractions, and then define composite fermions. So, but these fractions, you can simply attach m minus one flux quanta if you're in the lowest Landau level and define new particles. Now, keep in mind that it seems very straightforward, these composite fermions, the way you define them. But we should keep in mind that this really does represent strongly interacting system. All the interactions are buried in the fact that you can think of an object like this. So all the interactions there is strong Coulomb interactions. And what they tell us is that there are special values of M that the system chooses that will minimize the interaction potential energy. For example, if you have M equal to 3, so you have 1/3 filled and 2/3 empty. Now, the Coulomb interactions tell us that if you define composite fermions like this, you can rephrase the problem as if they are not interacting at all, which means that defining this composite fermions minimizes the Coulomb interaction potential. So minimizes the interaction potential, it all goes away, and you're just left with non-interacting Hamiltonian. Any questions so far? Also keep in mind that these composite fermions, they would never exist in vacuum. They exist only in some special strongly interacting systems. So only in some special case of strongly interacting system with magnetic field, only in these conditions, you would see something like composite fermion. This is not a particle that can exist on its own in vacuum. So these fractional quantum Hall states also have some special properties that they have excitations which are fractionally charged. So if you are in fractional quantum Hall state, nu equal to 1/3, the effective charge of the excitations is 1/3. And this effective charge can be thought of because the conductance that is carried in this state is 1/3 of the conductance that is carried by non-interacting electrons. So as a result of interactions, the effective charge of the electron is different than the bare charge. So this is similar to what you did when you calculated effective mass. So you can see you have some experience that electron-electron interactions can change the mass and charge of the excitations. And in this particular case, you find that the effective charge is E/3. Yes.
Why would we define this composite fermion with the two fluxes like in the opposite sign? I mean, like, why don't we define it just like an electron and two fluxes pointing in the same
direction? So two flux pointing up, that would give a total flux. So there will be a plus sign here. So you would not have a fully filled. So that would still be a partially filled system. I mean, you can do that, but that would mean that the wave function cannot be written like that. So you will still have that prefactor m minus 1 that would not cancel from the exchange. So, okay, so you can define any composite fermion. Now, the question is, what definition would map the system to a fully filled non-interacting case? So this particular choice for m equal to 3, two negative flux quanta, maps the system to the non-interacting case. So what that would mean is that these composite fermions are non-interacting. What you propose is also a composite fermion, but these composite fermions will remain strongly interacting.
Where is the extra magnetic field coming from, so to speak?
So one way to think about this is that the system is partially filled. So you have 3 times the magnetic flux quantum. So the way to minimize the way to minimize the Coulomb interaction potential. So each electrons are interacting themselves. So the way to minimize the electron-electron interactions is to spread out the electrons in the system in a way that effective flux plus charge, so you have now three, so you really have this system and one electron, right? So, okay, let me draw another thing and that will help our discussion. So let's start with fully filled system. So you have just one electron. So by the way, this is just a way to think about the state. So let's start with fully filled system. You have one electron, n electron, one electron per flux quantum. Now when you have a partially filled system, you really have three flux particles, so three times this arrow, and one electron. A way to minimize this system is to distribute electrons such that effectively you have one, effectively it acts like a fully, or you can say that one third of the system is filled with electrons, and in two thirds, you can think of them as whole, as empty, and you think of this empty or electrons not being there as negative flux, and that way you can think of where this negative comes from. But this is more, this is done really to minimize the energy. So if it helps, you can think of this as the unfilled or two-thirds empty flux quantum can be thought of as negative flux quantum for the one-third. So next, what we would like to do is we would like to show that, so far we have discussed the wave functions for various states. So many of these plateaus, they have the ground state of electrons for those parametric values. For example, for those values of magnetic field and densities can be expressed like this. Now in principle, you know the wave function, you can calculate any observable you want. But these wave functions are still not that straightforward to work with. What we have learned so far is that we can do a bit of work and write down the wave function for non-interacting case, and then we can map all of the interacting systems by defining composite fermions. Next, what we are going to do is we're going to see why the resistance has a plateau. So what I mean by that is, remember this plot, magnetic field, all resistance, H over E square. So you saw, let's see, this is one. So the system has many plateaus and so on. So this is how the Hall resistance looks like. What we want to do is, now we want to discuss why we have these plateaus. Now, remember the classical result? Classical result said that the Hall resistance should go linearly with the magnetic field. And this can be written as H by E square. So I'm just multiplying and dividing by flux quantum. So this can be rewritten as H by E square rho B divided by rho electron. So this is just the classical result. Now, if I choose my magnetic field such that this number comes out to be an integer, this result would agree. And what was the quantum result? Quantum result was that this is H by E square times F. So the classical result has no plateaus. The quantum result has plateaus. What I want to say is that if I draw a straight line through there, so this will be the classical result. There are some values where the classical result is going to agree with the quantum result. But the classical result does not explain why we have these plateaus. Now comes the tricky part. So far, we have considered the system to be free from disorder. So there is no impurities in this. So far, we have not talked about impurities at all. You did one problem in the tutorial where you had the ions and you changed the mass of one of the ions, and you saw that you get a localized mode in the system if the mass is different from the rest. Now, it turns out that just having Landau levels is not enough to explain these plateaus. So having the spectrum arranged, so what do I mean by Landau levels? The energy is n plus half h bar omega c, where omega c is E b over m. So I have highly degenerate Landau levels. Just having these Landau levels is not enough to explain the existence of these plateaus. What is necessary is to have disorder in the system. So this is a bit tricky, the reason being following. If you have too much disorder, so A, any system in the lab is going to have some dirt in it. In fact, having disorder in the system is natural. But if the system is too dirty, then the effect of discrete Landau levels, or Landau levels being separated from each other by h bar omega c, will get washed out. So you want a system to have some disorder, but not too much. What that really means is, now, how to think of disorder? Think of disorder as some random potential that these electrons see, and let's call it impurity XY. So we have a two-dimensional system. One way to think of disorder is that imagine that one of the ions is replaced by some other type of ion. So that will have some excess charge. You can think of this excess charge will produce some potential. So one way to think of disorder is to include some randomly distributed potential, and which is labeled by V impurity XY. If this potential say the expectation value in the ground state of this potential is of the same order. So what we want is that this potential must be much less than h bar omega c. If this is not the case, that would mean that the disorder washes out the fact that you have separate Landau levels. In that case, you would see no plateaus at all. So in the experiments, if you do experiments on semiconductor wafers that have too much dirt or too much disorder, you are not going to see quantized or these plateaus. You would just see a straight line. So you need, what this constraint really means is that you need a clean sample to see these quantized plateaus. But if the system is completely clean, you also would not see plateaus. So you need disorder to explain the existence of plateaus. and the disorder is in this regime. Now, this regime, when you calculate the numbers for, say, silicon wafers or germanium wafers or semiconducting wafers, it turns out that this constraint actually means that you must have relatively clean samples, speaking practically. Any questions so far? Now, also, what this potential does, what this random potential will do, is it will break translational invariance in the system. The Hamiltonian is not going to commute with the momentum operators anymore. So what we want to do next is we want to understand the effect of a potential on the Hamiltonian. In general, we would like it to be this random potential. So to do this, as we discussed in the last lecture, choice of gauge we can choose any gauge we want. And for this discussion, another gauge is easier to do the calculation, and that is called Landau gauge. So first, let's solve the problem without any potential in Landau gauge. Then we are going to add a potential or an electric field on the problem. And then we are going to generalize this potential to a random potential. So what we are interested in solving here is 1 over 2m p plus ea square. So let's ignore any interactions and impurities for the moment. So what we want to solve is, now we have to choose the gauge, and the Landau gauge is defined by choosing the vector potential to be 0 px 0. You can see that this vector potential gives rise to a magnetic field B in the Z direction. So what you can do is just write down this Hamiltonian, px square plus so in the symmetric gauge that we discussed yesterday, we saw how we can calculate the wave functions. We also found that the system has infinite degeneracy. That is what we expect to find here also. Any observable values of any observable should not depend on the choice of the gauge. So the spectrum, we should get the same spectrum as we did for the symmetric gauge. So now let's make an ansatz. What we do is, let's say that the wave functions psi k x y, we can make a substitution. This is e to the power I k y some function k on x. The reason to choose this ansatz is you can see in the Hamiltonian we have translational invariance in y. We do not have y coordinate in the problem. We only have py terms. That means the Hamiltonian commute with momentum operator, py operator. That means py is a good quantum number. So I can label the states with momentum in y coordinate. I choose that momentum to be k, and this is the wave function we are going to substitute in this Hamiltonian. So So what we find is that the Hamiltonian acting on this wave function psi kxy, simply 1 over 2m px square plus h bar k plus ebx square . Let's define this as hk psi k xy. Now, so this hk is this quantity here. This Hamiltonian looks very familiar. This is momentum square times a potential that is quadratic in x. So this is just a simple harmonic oscillator. So hk Hamiltonian is Hamiltonian for a simple harmonic oscillator where the coordinate is not at origin. So we have the coordinate is x replaced by, so there is a shift of the origin. So it's simple harmonic oscillator where origin has been shifted. So I can calculate the energy eigenvalues for this Hamiltonian. I know it is simple harmonic oscillator, so let's label energies with N. So when we complete the square, we find that the frequency of this simple harmonic oscillator is h bar omega c. So we find exactly the same result that we found for symmetric gauge. Now we can also write down the wave functions. Let's write down the psi nk. Now these wave functions, they are going to be simple harmonic oscillator wave functions with a plane wave factor in the y direction. Times a Gaussian . So in Landau gauge, the wave functions are these. They're basically Hermite polynomials times Gaussian, but now x, the origin is shifted to x plus kl square. And again, we can see that the energy eigenvalues, they do not depend on k at all. So any value of momentum in y direction will give you the same eigenvalue, so there is infinite degeneracy. Again, when you impose finite boundary conditions that the wave function vanishes, or the system has finite size, you will get some quantized values of k only, so the degeneracy will be finite. Yes?
Couldn't we just shift it to the origin? Change a by a constant.
If you just add a constant, that would not do anything. So if you add a constant, that will be a constant shift for energy.
Depends on k, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, so this shift here does depend on k. This shift also depends on k, but the energy eigenvalues don't. So this we always would find the case that the wave functions would depend on the gauge you choose. Any questions so far? So next what we want to do is we want to add an electric field in this problem. So what we are going to do is Let me write down the result and then we'll pick it up tomorrow. So now I want to add a term to this Hamiltonian. So I have 1 over 2m px square plus py plus e bx square. Let me add to this an electric field. So the contribution to the Hamiltonian is E times E is the electric field, x. So this potential denotes an electric field in x. As a result of this electric field, now I can do the same trick. I would like to now complete the square. Write down this Hamiltonian in terms of simple harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian. And what I will find now is that the energy eigenvalues are h power omega c, n plus half, plus ee and the wave functions now So what I will do to solve this problem is again complete the square. I will get a bunch of terms. So I will have wave functions would have these additional factors when I complete the square. So the energy now does depend on k. So you can see that adding an electric field lifts the degeneracy. Any questions so far? So next, what we can do is I'll just define one more quantity and then we'll pick it up tomorrow. I will define a quantity x naught called the guiding center coordinate. Which is equal to minus KL square plus ME dB square. And with this guiding center coordinate, the wave function can be written as IKY, Hermite polynomial as X minus X naught. So what we have really done is define a new variable, guiding center coordinate. And what it means is it picks out the center of the Gaussian or these wave functions. So you can think of guiding center coordinate as the location in space where this Gaussian is peaked. So if you think of the system in, let's say this is x and this is y, you have many values of x naught depending on k. So you have many values of x naught where you have this Gaussian. So what it represents is it's a plane wave in y along y, the wave functions look like sine and cosine. And in x, you have a Gaussian factor, but it is centered at different values of x naught, depending on the wave vector in y direction. So this Gaussian factor means you can think of them effectively as these lines. And there's a Gaussian factor. There's also a Hermite polynomial in x. But you'll have a bunch of states. This value x naught depends on the wave vector k itself. And then you will have sine and cosine in y direction. So we are going to start here tomorrow. What we will find is that now that this energy depends on k, we can calculate group velocity, which is dE over dk, and we'll find that this system has a drift velocity in y direction. So we start with cyclotron trajectories. Electrons in magnetic field move in circles. We apply an electric field in x direction, and we find that the system drifts not in x direction, but in y direction. So we'll start here tomorrow and then generalize this term to a random potential.